Hello, the internet, and welcome to this episode of the Weekly Zeitgeist. These are some of our favorite segments from this week, all edited together into one nonstop infotainment laugh extravaganza. So without further ado, here is the Weekly Zeitgeist. All right, let's get into the stories of the day. Over the weekend, we had a fire in New York City, which was national news because it was in Trump Tower. and we once again get a metaphor that we'd all call hacky if we saw it in a movie, but it's happening in reality, so it's just like another news story. And, you know, this was getting coverage for a couple of reasons. A guy died, which is a shame. He's a wealthy art collector, and his name was Todd Brasner. And he was on a floor that didn't have fire sprinklers, which you would think would be mandatory these days. And apparently it is in any new building that was built after like the 90s, late 90s in New York City. After a couple fires killed a bunch of people, they were like, okay, we will might need those sprinklers. But landlords and developers like Donald Trump, and including Donald Trump, lobbied against sprinklers as being unnecessary, and which translates to expensive for him. And he, you know, through spending and hassling, got them to make it so that it was only required to add sprinklers into buildings that were built going forward. We should never totally normalize the fact that we have this cartoon landlord villain as the president.
Right.
Like, it's easy to just forget that this dude is like a bad guy.
Mr. Cutting Corners.
Right.
Basically, this guy, this 67-year-old dude who lost his life, a lot of the news is kind of portraying it too, of that like there was added tragedy because this man was trying to move out of Trump Tower, but because it was in Trump Tower, nobody wanted to buy it or whatever, which is, yeah, sure, I get that. It must have sucked to have been stuck with that building, especially like as, you know, security increased. And it's like, I'm walking into a weird building now. People are like demonstrating, or there's like armed police or whatever. Mm-hmm. But, you know, at the end, it's crazy to know that this is all born out of the idea of it just being simply the money wasn't there, or he didn't want to spend the money. Trump didn't want to make the building safe. Just totally fucking avoidable. I don't know. It's weird. It's one of those stories, too, we were talking before. It's like, yes, this is a fucked up story. And then it's also one of those Trump stories where you go, yeah, of course a fucking person who is living in Trump Tower died in a completely avoidable way simply because of this person's greed as a developer of not wanting to build in these added security measures.
Right.
So, and I think that sort of mentality is obviously bleeding into every level of our government now.
I just hope that people can start to realize how government policy actually does affect your life and can kill you. And I feel like that's something that most of the country is like, oh, we let them lawmakers go in there and clap the gavels and write the papers and it don't affect us. And it's like, no, it does. It can kill you. Like, decisions made by the government can and will kill you.
Yeah. Well, that's, again, why, you know, the people talk about, oh, the regulations is a bad word.
Right.
Yeah,
but this
like,
is the kind of shit that you need basic safety standards so someone has at least some form of fire, you know, some kind of sprinkler system to combat the fire that breaks out.
Right.
Yeah.
These are the sorts of things that, you know, government regulations are a bad word. They're just, it's not a cool thing to talk about in most of America, but also, especially in like Fox News America and Trump America, they think that all government is bad. So if a government is doing it, it should not be happening.
Right. And the people who are applauding regulations being taken down are assholes who are like, see, now we don't have to spend that extra $70K to put in the sprinkler system and we can save that, blah, blah, blah.
Right. And privatize it.
Yeah. That's the kind of fucking regular. It's like, come on,
and
man.
And that
like,
would have made jobs for y'all.
Exactly.
Private firemen.
Right. Oh, right.
Privatized firemen. Only the rich can have their fires put out.
Think about how much money you can make.
Right.
But yeah, in addition to that sort of thinking bleeding into our national government now, it apparently, you know, he didn't just make it so that Trump Tower didn't need to add sprinklers. It's all residential buildings in New York City. And, you know, some experts were talking about on yesterday's Sunday shows, that the buildings in New York are basically fire traps because of this legislation, because they don't have sprinklers and fire engine ladders only go to something like the 19th floor. And that's
Jesus.
That's nothing in New York. You know, most buildings are above 19 stories tall. So, yeah, it's not great.
Damn. It's a good thing he was discriminating against the blacks. We won't be dying in those fires.
There you go.
Oh, it couldn't move in.
Right. So we do want to talk about a study that just came out that male students vastly overestimate their intelligence when compared to female students.
No.
Shocker.
Which is not the most counterintuitive thing.
Bro, but what if
heard.
You are just smarter? Right. Than everybody.
Right. So a male student with an average grade, for example, was predicted to see himself as smarter than 66% of his class, whereas a female student with the same grade was expected to see herself as smarter than only 54% of her class. Mm. So we all think we're smarter than we actually are, but men, it's vastly overestimated.
I don't know. Do you ever grow up in an Asian house? Because I'll get A's, and my mom was like, you think you're smart?
Right. You get a 99, they'd be like, what happened to the 1 point?
Exactly.
Right.
So it's funny because I have a almost different relationship with grades where I was always operating from a place of lack.
Right.
Where I was like, I have to prove myself. I'm not smarter than everybody.
Right.
So, yes, thank you, everybody. I'm the most woke man on earth. Gotta go.
But I do think that, yeah, we have talked about the Dunning-Kruger effect and the fact that people who don't know all that much are the ones who are most likely to overestimate themselves, and people who know a lot are the most likely to accurately or underestimate themselves.
Yeah.
But I just think it's interesting that men, so there's this huge gap in the STEMs. You know, more men get STEM degrees, science, technology,
engineering
and mathematics. And more men get STEM degrees, more men go into STEM fields. Yeah, so women fill 47% of all U.S. jobs. This is in 2015, but they hold only 24% of STEM jobs because there's just this gap. And we saw this when there was that Googler who got fired from Google for posting a letter where he was like, men are just better at engineering than women.
Right.
Like, what can I say? This is one of those things that people actually believe, and you'd be surprised how many men actually believe, like, men are just have better minds for math. Like,
wait, really?
The president, the president of fucking Harvard was, like, basically said something to that effect not too long ago.
Well, then you don't deserve to be anywhere near Harvard, bro.
Right. He got in a lot of trouble for it, but he was like, we have to acknowledge that there are differences between male and female minds.
And black people have an extra muscle in their hamstring, which is why they run faster.
That's why they're jumping so high.
Yeah, exactly. That's
the
slippery slope, bro.
Oh, God.
And I've just witnessed this personally, my wife being a doctor. Like, it's just crazy, the unspoken sexism in that field. Like, and just, like, I've gone into doctor's appointments where the doctor will talk to me about her, like, when she has something wrong with her. Like,
wait, why are you taking her to her doctor's appointment?
I was just with her.
Oh, okay. I thought, for the child, when you're having a child?
No. She was there at the doctor's appointment. I was just with her. It was like a weird
freak accident.
I don't know.
What the fuck are you doing?
In my mind, I'm painting In my mind, I'm painting the super misogynistic, problematic husband. He's like, okay, you want to go to the doctor? Okay, I'm going to go with you.
No, I went with her. She wasn't feeling good.
I know. I don't know about healthy relationships,
the doctor,
as we've already seen.
The doctor,
what are you doing, the spine on her?
The doctor knew that.
He going to tell you to leave me.
She was a doctor. And yet still told me, like, the
diagnosis. Yeah. Like you're buying a fucking
car
or something.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, the thing with the dually is, man, the horsepower you're getting out of this thing now, lady.
Wife is there.
Yeah. I know. I might as well be speaking Chinese to you, little lady, but hey, you get it right, sir. This Cummins turbo diesel.
Right, exactly.
You're going to want that.
There was a scene in Mad Men where they talked to January Jones's husband about her cancer diagnosis while just like sitting there, and that shit still happens, man.
Right,
and like it just seems like it's more embedded in people's minds than we realize, and it's just so predictable that undergraduate men would just have this sort of inbuilt overconfidence.
Right. And are they saying that sort of contributing to an atmosphere that, like, where women are probably at a sort of fork in the road to choose a STEM career,
right,
STEM academic path, and they're just kind of like, fuck it, if I'm dealing with this shit, then no.
Well, they, so what they're saying, and this has been true in my experience, is that women internalize these sort of beliefs. Like, women are less likely to raise their hands in the class because I think they are saying that the instructors are more likely to be men. But even if women, it's a long-term thing. It's a thing where, you know, even women who come up in the STEM field are indoctrinated with this idea that, like, men run shit.
Yeah. And, well, that's true. The tech world is still the last sort of, well, not the last frontier, but one of the remaining frontiers super fucked up, lopsided.
Yeah.
Right.
I think that studies like this, it's great to shed light, but I feel like sometimes in the way that we strive for equality of the sexes or even the races, it might not be like the most effective. It's weird to try to tell people who are arrogant to like come down and realize like, oh, you're not that great. When I think it might be easier for us to just all come up to place. Like, I remember when I was a kid, my grandma used to tell me that only black people were good at things. And I believed this for so long, actually, until I heard Christina Aguilera sing, because I was like, great, is she not black? But what that gave me she probably is. But what that gave me was an ethnocentricity that gave me confidence, especially as a darker skinned black woman where I have to deal with the bullshit within my own race. Yeah. But it made me feel like I'm supposed to be here. I should be taking up space. I feel like we as women have to get more like, you know, maybe we should be man spreading too. Instead of asking the man to stop spreading, you just move your thighs out a little more too. Like, take up a little more space.
Right. Well, then I think that's what this article is. You just distill it down to, men are fucking dumb and they think they're smarter than they are. So don't worry.
Like, raise your hand. Talk over them.
Right. Yeah, probably.
Step on their words.
Yeah. Seriously.
It might be easier than like, hey guys, could y'all be considerate?
Yeah. Could you be more realistic about how dumb you are?
Yeah. Honest with yourself about your ability, sir.
I mean, I think their main takeaway is that they need more women in STEM fields and they need to actually do more structural things to encourage women to go into these fields.
Because men make you miserable sometimes in those kinds of male-dominated atmospheres. I mean, I did stand-up for forever, and it starts to become very taxing on your soul to constantly have to deal with harassment and men talking to you crazy.
Right.
And like, yeah, and it can make you want to leave,
right,
for sure. So I can understand why women are like, if I'm already in this expertise, like, I don't necessarily have to do this with my education. I can still make money and avoid men.
Right. Men in stand-up are specifically like just talk down to you or like assume that you're
be like, oh, you need to be as funny as you are cute or like crazy shit like that. Yeah, to my face, and think they're being nice to me.
Is he like a 60s talent agent?
Because you remember, like, stand-up is still one of those fields that goes down mostly in dark, weird bars.
Right.
So it's like, it's a rodeo. Like, that's why when shit came out about, like, you know, Louis C.K. and whoever else, it's like, yeah, they're stand-up guys. Like, what do you mean? Every stand-up guy showing you their dick. It's the norm.
Their office is a murky, dark room.
It is, in the middle of the night.
Right.
But yeah, so I completely understand fields that would drive you out of them.
Right. Yeah, so it's probably not just the STEM fields either, but I think this is
the tech industry
of a broader...
is bad.
Yeah, the tech industry is especially bad, especially for being located in... you know, a town that prides itself on wokeness, San Francisco.
Right.
And it's pretty rough up there. Real quick, I did want to touch on the thing that press conference was supposed to be about, the Syria conflict, because listening to super producer Anna Hosnier and Shireen Yunez's podcast, Ethnically Ambiguous, I have been kind of getting a better feel for what's going on in Syria, and just a couple things I wanted to share with you guys that helped put the whole Syrian conflict into perspective. So something that I'm just learning, and I think a lot of people knew this, is that this all started with the Arab Spring and sort of the democratic uprising in the Middle East. And basically that helped me make sense of the fact that Russia is so on board with the Syrian government side, as opposed to the rebels, because Russia is always on the side against democracy, essentially.
Mm-hmm. And because of shutting shit down.
Right. And because their spring was about like democratic uprising, they are, you know, going to support the Syrian government and any other government that is, you know, on the side of being authoritarian.
Because you don't want your kids getting ideas.
Right. And Iran also fits into that rubric. You know, they are not in favor of Western democracies. And then there's also the fact that, so Syria is mostly Sunni, and they are run by a dictator who's secular. But, you know, Iran is mostly Shia. And so there's that kind of inherent conflict.
Built-in conflict, yeah.
Right. And that helped me make sense of, I guess, just where we are in the conflict. So, you know, America is technically on the side of the rebels, and the, you know, 90% of Syria is Sunni. They are run by a dictator who is, you know, secular, like I said. So America is supposed to be supporting the people and the rebellion, and but they haven't totally full-throatedly supported them. And Saudi Arabia, who is also Sunni, has been sort of standing on the sidelines a little bit, not really supporting because they're taking America's lead. So that also put the rise of Mohammed bin Salman in context, because, like, why he's important, because he is sort of on the American side if you're looking at things like around this conflict.
Right.
So, yeah, that helped make sense of it to me. We have a piece from one of our writers that we won't have time to get into about how the military sort of freaked out about Russia's cyber powers, because they're apparently just like taking drones out of the sky with cyber attacks.
Yeah, their drone jamming capability is pretty good. And there are people in the U.S. military like, yeah, how did they fucking figure that out?
Right.
Because apparently the drones that the U.S. is using like have built-in sort of like anti-scrambling mechanisms. And, you know, they're running on different, I guess, frequencies. Look, I'm not a fucking dronologist. Right. But, you know, like they have a lot of built-in countermeasures to sort of counteract these kinds of things. And they're like, somehow Russia cracked it.
Right.
But not the armed drones. Like the Predator and Reaper drones that have guns, like that are armed. Those have not been
jammed yet.
Like, they haven't been able to jam those.
Right.
Can I say something about the whole thing?
Yes.
Which is that I think that listening to you break down sort of an overview, I think highlights one of my big issues with the whole Syria conversation, which is that I think your average American person doesn't know the ins and out of the situation. Like, certainly I am not an expert on Syria. And it's one of those things that I feel like people don't really know that much about, so they're just sort of tuning out. And it's it's very, I mean, like, we could be doing, you know, like scaling up military intervention in Syria. And I think people are like, oh, I don't really know. And
is that good?
I'm
going to
know, like,
bad?
What? Where is that? Like,
right.
And I think that people are not paying attention to it because it projects as like a very complex issue. And it is. And it worries me that it's not a conversation that like average folks are having, because who is that going to impact? Like the American people, right? Like if they're sending troops over, like that's going to be us. And I think that we're not even really checked in on that conversation.
Yeah.
Well, and what the stakeholders want in this situation, right? Because I think on one hand, with the U.S. retreating, that has emboldened, like, clearly this triumvirate of Russia, Turkey, and Iran to kind of come together and be like, oh, looks like the U.S. is taking a back seat, so we can dictate sort of what the future is going to be in this region.
Right.
And that also is kind of weird because the U.S. doesn't want to draw red lines and then not follow up on them, because then that makes Trump look toothless.
Right.
And he's up against that too. There's so many. It's like he's got his back against the wall. Like, you know, like, and also, you know, he wanted to pull out, but then
and
clearly
he
there's
said
this,
that, which was not a good idea. John McCain was like, yo, this is why you don't say we're planning to pull out before you do it.
Right, exactly. And then look what happens. And, you know, Israel has been like, apparently over the weekend, you know, Israel struck an airbase and no one still quite knows why.
Mm-hmm.
Like when they have had airstrikes in Syria, it's typically to like intercept shipments of like Iranian weapons to Hezbollah. And that's why they've had, but the people are still kind of confused and they haven't officially said so. There's so many moving parts. And yes, again, if we do enter another armed conflict, like, and we actually put boots on the ground, like in a really, really focused, concentrated effort to hit back at Assad's military capability and his forces, that's like not insignificant.
Right. No, and this is like, has the feel of like a world war type thing where like all the different sides are sort of aligning. And, you know, everything that other side stands for, you know, like you said, Turkey has traditionally been a U.S. ally, but now they have a dictator in charge. And so they are suddenly, you know, trending toward the side of Russia and dictatorships and military control in Iran. So,
well, because the more and more Turkey fucks around and, you know, commits more human rights violations, that's usually when the U.S. starts to give them static and they're like, bro, you can't do this. Like, come on, we have bases there. You can't just be violating people's human rights. And the more that they do that, that's just been, you know, deteriorating our relationship with Turkey and sort of putting them closer into the Iran-Russia party, because they're like, oh, we kind of like how you move. And they're kind of strange bedfellows, too. Like, historically, they've, you know, Russia and Turkey have been enemies.
Yeah.
But anyway,
and
I
then,
think...
Sorry. And then Super Producer Anna Hosni just pointed out that ISIS also entered the fray. Got the ISIS drop. Not too long ago. Completely complicating an already insanely complicated situation, because they're not necessarily on either side, but then...
They're filling a power vacuum.
Right. And I think there are some people, like I think Syrian forces don't necessarily kill ISIS fighters. Like, they're not actively targeting them. So it's a very complicated situation, but it's one that started making sense to me when I learned the facts that I just tried to share there. So we'll be keeping an eye on that. Trump said that, you know, because of this chemical weapon attack over the weekend, there will be a response from America and France coming in the next 24 to 48 hours. So we'll be keeping an eye on that with the rest of the world. We're going to take a break. We'll be right back. And we're back, and we're talking about the things people are thinking and talking about right now, and the thing that people are thinking and talking about right now is Mark Zuckerberg's testimony in front of Congress.
Testimony is I don't know if that's the, that seems like a misnomer.
Right.
Seemed like a in IRL FAQ for older people about how Facebook works.
So that was a thing that happened was, so you could tell that a lot of these elderly Congress people would have these prepared remarks from their younger staffers who had like done all the legwork. And as long as they stuck to those remarks and like the first question, they were all good. And then they would just get distracted by something he said
right.
and would suddenly be like, wait, now how's that work?
Yeah.
Because you said that it's free and how do you make money then?
I liked the St. Louis Cardinals page and I was getting information about the Brewers. Something's not right.
Right. Thought it was weird that he addressed everyone as senator without their last name.
Well,
it was like calling everyone Mister, like a child. Well, say, I mean, Mister.
That was the other thing we found out yesterday is that he's 5'7".
Yeah,
I didn't realize he's 5'7".
Because
everyone showed, they're like, look at, he's on a booster seat, which is actually, to be fair, common practice because.
And also, it's like a back thing, like
well,
Phil
right,
Jackson
but some people
too.
Like James Comey wouldn't need the booster seat because he's like 600.
He's out of
feet
frame.
Tall,
right. Yeah,
right?
He's out of
you
frame.
Know what I mean?
Right.
But like, yeah, if you're 5'7", and also I know it's crazy because you can clearly tell his PR people are very protective about how he's shot, like photographically, because I wouldn't have known just based on photographs that he was only 5'7".
Yeah, no, I had no idea.
How tall would you guess he was?
I thought he was like probably 5'9 or 10.
5'10, 5'11.
5'11, but not 6 foot.
Not six foot.
We never considered him a 6 footer.
After so many meetings, so many celebrities in real life, I never assume anyone is 6 feet tall. Like,
yeah.
Right.
You always think they are because how shots are framed and things like that. But then you're like, you're 5'8".
Right.
Right. But yeah, he's a wee man. And yeah, there were some interesting moments, but for the most part, it did seem like they were just asking him to explain Facebook in a lot of moments. You know, the younger congresspeople, you know, like took it to him, like Senator Kamala Harris, you know, actually had valid questions that were pretty interesting. But some of the issues that were raised was the Facebook's involvement in Myanmar, which I knew that people had credited Facebook with spreading some of the, you know, hate speech that eventually led to basically genocide. But I actually heard an expert on Facebook talking about it today, and she was basically saying it's completely inexcusable what they did, because people were like, there is all this hate speech being spread right now, and you guys aren't doing anything. Like, Facebook is triumph of the will currently in our country. It is spreading hatred currently actively. And, you know, it really brought into focus for me, and this was something that was raised during the conversation, but his fitness to run this company, like the things that made him good at creating this giant product that everybody likes are not the things that will make you good at running a global community.
Right.
Like, he is being expected. Like, a lot of the things we're asking him to do are things that a, like, a servant of people would do, you know, somebody
right.
who's selfless and just is trying to make everybody's lives as good as possible, and somebody who is, like, community-minded and management-minded. And the thing that he's extremely good at is just, like, making a cool product that
right.
creates services for people like him. I don't think he's that interested in, you know, being on the ground in Myanmar and figuring
right.
out how that works.
Well, you could tell too, because even when that he did that CNN interview like a few weeks ago, he was like, if you told me in 2004 I would be here talking about, like, you know, the dangers of Facebook to, like, a legitimate democratic election, I'd be like, what the heck are you talking about? Like, yeah, he doesn't have the interest, and I don't think, you know, he felt like his work's done, and then, like, you know, what do you want me to do? I'm just going to sit on my pile of $60+ billion and right. count it all day.
Right. I don't mean to jump the gun. I don't know if you're going to touch on it, but, like, this feels like such a direct parallel to Trump, where it's just like wasn't last week, didn't a video come out where someone asked Donald Trump, they were like, what advice would you give yourself 10 years ago? And he was like, don't run for president.
Really?
And, yeah. He was like, right. he just, like, said that, and it was like a laugh line, but, like, you could tell that it's like, these things sound great, and when any project is getting started, if you get it off the ground, congratulations. But, like, to your point, you have yeah. to then start putting in people who are selfless, who are going to be able to oversee it,
right.
to nurture it, and go on to your next idea. But
right.
yeah.
I'm with you. It's like, at some point, a certain responsibility has to be taken
yeah.
by Facebook.
You need right. somebody who's at least as powerful as him, who is basically the president of this $2 billion nation
yeah,
that they've created.
Nation, yeah.
Like, I mean, I have experience with this at Cracked. Like, the things that made me good at creating a product that made Cracked big didn't necessarily make me good at, like, running a massive community and running a massive business.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, you know, that
right.
I think that was a big failing of mine, because, like, that's just not what I was in a position to do. You know, that's mm-hmm. not what I was trained at or good at.
Maybe Mark can hire Barack Obama.
Yeah.
You know,
like,
I mean?
That's
a man of
the
people.
Type of person that we need.
A man
seriously.
Of the people.
That would
he
be.
Could work from home, hopefully.
Or, like, somebody from the UN or something, because
yeah.
that's essentially what they need. We're also asking him to do things for which he wouldn't get credit, which, you know, like, stopping a genocide before it happens
right.
is not a thing that you get credit for.
Right.
Like, right.
unfortunately, that's just not how shit
works.
The
stats that don't
right.
get in the playbook
right.
kind
exactly.
of. Right,
exactly. It's like the things that didn't happen is, and, like, we just need them to find somebody who that's going to be their entire focus.
Yeah. Well, I mean.
Did you guys delete your Facebooks? It seems like that's been a groundswell.
I haven't.
You should delete your Facebooks.
I use it so sparingly that, like, once I looked at what categories that they had, because, you know, you can find out what ad categories
right.
Facebook was able to put you in based on what they know.
Right.
I had used it so little that I felt like, okay, you might not know much. But that's not just the only way Facebook gets you, which is sort of kind of what it seemed like a lot of people during these testimonies were trying to get at.
Right.
Because a lot of the stuff was everyone was saying, like, you're selling people's personal data. You're selling people's personal data. You're selling people's personal data. And he's like, well, no, we're not selling the data. We have the data that allows us to have a laser-guided advertising, targeted
right.
advertising. And so, you know, we're not selling the data.
We're
just
using
the
hell out of it.
Yeah, right, right. right.
We're selling access to you,
right.
essentially. And I do think super producer Nick Stumpf was pointing out that some of the questions that people were like, look at this dumb old person, like Orrin Hatch being like, so how the hell are you going to make money if you're giving it away for free? And him being like, we sell ads, Senator.
Right.
Was, first of all, that was like, okay, yeah, I get why you're an asshole. Like, I get exactly the type of asshole you are. But also, I think Hatch might have been trying to make the point that, you know, okay, so you're selling something, you're making money somehow. If we're not paying you, like, what the fuck
what are
is
you selling?
Happening?
Yeah.
yeah, exactly.
And he's like, we're selling access to everyone,
yeah.
basically. We're not the data. And he was really clear on repeating. I think he repeated that, like, same line, like, 8 times
right.
throughout the testimony. Because he had his little note sheet that he was using. And I feel like that was probably highlighted 900 times to tell people, we're not selling personal data.
Right. Facebook uses your data to sell access to you.
Yeah,
Senator.
Senator.
Yeah.
Senator.
Mm-hmm. Mr.
Just
Senator.
Like
Senator.
A,
Mr.
Yeah. A perpetual awkward Sears portrait studio photo of a sleep deprived person. And yeah, we'll see how today goes. But man, he dude looks like he needs a good night's sleep. yeah. Looks like he has kinda, not taken a solid shit in about a
years.
Year.
Yeah, yeah, he is Mr. Diarrhea for sure.
yeah, your lower intestine closes up when you go to the hill, right? Yeah, I feel like that's a solid week where you're like, I'm not going to be regular now.
Yeah,
right.
You begin to toxify.
So a slightly lower stakes but more cartoonish example of Trump underestimating the intelligence of literally everyone around him, and in this case being correct. So there's this New York Post story that maybe moved like some of the most copies that any New York Post headline has ever moved, where Marla Maples, President Trump's former wife, one of his former wives.
Mother
Tiffany,
of Tiffany.
Yeah,
of
Tiffany's mother.
The fun one.
Came out and said, Trump is the best sex I've ever had. And that was blasted across the front page of the wildly conservative New York Post.
With the smug-ass Donald Trump. The cover is so funny because he's just like, yeah, in big New York Post style, best sex ever had. And he's just grinning Trump next to it.
Right.
Yeah. Not even Marla Maples.
Right. So apparently, the editor from that time has come out and said, you know, we actually mostly thought that that was just Trump impersonating Marla Maples, impersonating his wife,
right.
Which is a thing that he's been known to do. And actually, I think we have audio of him on a phone conversation with a different reporter where he is playing the role of his spokesman.
John Miller, I think.
John Miller.
Or whatever it was.
Who was a recurring Trump spokesman mm-hmm. who nobody can find any record of existing. But he would call up reporters and be like, yeah, I'm John Miller. I want to talk to you on behalf of Donald Trump.
The best is that he doesn't even try and do a voice.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe he's trying to do
or in his head, but right. like if you were anyone who knew Donald Trump, you'd be like, yeah, okay, John Miller, how can I help you?
So let's hear some clips of John Miller talking to a reporter.
Yeah, he gets called by everybody. He gets called by everybody in the book in terms of women. And well, he gets called by a lot of people.
Yeah.
Well, what about, I mean, this Carla Peretti, how important is she right now? Is she not?
Well, I think it's somebody that, you know, she's beautiful. I saw her once quickly, and she's beautiful and all, but I think that he's got a whole open field, really. And actresses, people that you write about, just call to see if they can go out with them and things. So.
I think that, I mean, he...
Right. He has a girlfriend. She lives in Canada, but she calls all the time.
You wouldn't meet her because she lives out there.
She's beautiful. She's beautiful.
Yeah.
She's a model.
Yeah. Oh, man. That time-honored classic lie from junior high, the girlfriend in the other state.
Right. Oh, yeah.
So why did he get away with this just doing voices? And the New York Post took him at his word. So the New York Post is a conservative tabloid, and we're finding out more and more that a big part of the Trump mythos is that he has good connections in the tabloid industry.
Right. Exactly.
And that seems to be very similar to the way that the New York Post got the quote for their cover.
Right. Because at the time, this is like in 1990, he was trying to divorce Ivana Trump. And she was, I guess, regularly like just owning him in the tabloid, like in the comms war about their divorce. And so one day something came out. He calls the New York Post, like editor of the New York Post. And this is a quote. He says, "Those fucking bitches, I want a front page story tomorrow." This is what they're saying was an actual quote from him. And the editor told him, said the only way you're going to get on the front page is if it has to do with sex, money, murder.
And this he briefly considered murdering somebody.
Not sex,
Let's
money,
bring
murder.
Bring back the Central Park Five.
Yeah, not the New York Blood Gang, sex, money, murder, but those three topics. So Trump said, oh, well, you know, Marla says I'm like the best sex she's ever had. And the editor responded, well, do you have anyone that can corroborate this? And he's on the phone. He just is like, apparently this is how the conversation goes. He goes, hey, Marla, tell him about how you always say I'm the best at sex.
Yes, Donald.
Did you hear that? You see? So she said that, and you should print that. And they did. And and retrospectively, they're like, yeah, we always were a little dubious about who may have been actually saying that on the back of the phone.
Right.
But, you know, when he has to change the narrative, he knows how to take his destiny into his own hands and just create realities.
He finds people even dumber than him.
Right.
Gets them to report trash.
Yeah, or who are prone to being friendly to people like him. The New York Post is a conservative tabloid. Mm-hmm. And yeah, that seems to be a big part of how the Trump mythos has been created from the start and now, you know, running into his run for the presidency. We're now finding out the New Yorker has just released a report saying that the National Enquirer paid $30,000 to kill a story about Trump having an illegitimate kid. The New Yorker hasn't uncovered anything saying that he did actually have an illegitimate kid, just that the National Enquirer paid $30,000 for that story and then just buried it, never published it. And this is a big deal because it establishes, you know, we've already seen that this company would do this for Trump with other stories of him having affairs. You know, they would do a catch and kill where they pay, you know, $80,000 for a story and then just completely kill it. And this is, by the way, one of the most frugal media companies out there. And they're just paying money just to...
So as in, like, they wouldn't throw money at something if there wasn't a reason to bury it.
Yes.
As in, like, they're getting something more valuable from Donald Trump
to
keep this out of their magazine.
Right. And this particular story, the $30,000 paid to kill the story about him having an illegitimate child, is significant because it establishes a pattern of buying and burying stories that could be damaging to the president during the campaign, which is against campaign finance.
I mean, if you believe Fire and Fury, Steve Bannon was like, hey, Kazowitz was like the fucking fixer, man. Like, what are there, like 100 women? Right. There's like that quote about there being 100. I mean, I hope that's an exaggeration,
right?
But who knows? I mean, the way this fucking guy moves, I wouldn't put it past him.
It reminds me, like, in the Game of Thrones story where, like, Robert Baratheon has like 20 illegitimate children, and so and all the Lannisters are like just trying to go around and kill all of them.
Right,
like,
instead
of still killing the story, they go around and kill actual people that might be this, like, the heir to the throne.
They don't know.
Yeah.
Very similar.
Better safe than sorry.
Yeah. So they were just doing that with people who had information.
So I just want to read from the New Yorker article because it's just interesting how this ties into some of the stuff we've been talking about. On a section of our podcast you wouldn't think would be this relevant, but we do a Bloid Watch. Every Friday, and where we look at the what's on the front page of the tabloids, because people are looking at that, seeing that every time they go to the grocery store. And, you know, there's wild shit being published on those front pages, and it always seems to be about the Clintons doing bad stuff or Obama, and never about Trump. And that's because almost all of those tabloids are owned by this company, American Media Inc.
They're kind of like the fake news before it went to the internet.
Right,
it was like
exactly.
Just the tabloid news is just whatever, make up shit bad about someone.
Exactly.
To your own purpose.
So two sources from American Media Inc. Said that they think that the catch and kill operations basically cemented a partnership between Pecker, who's the head of AMI, and Trump, and that people close to President Trump had subsequently introduced Pecker to potential sources of funding, and this ties back to that random magazine tabloid about MBS, Mohammed bin Salman.
Bin Salman, crown prince.
Yeah, the crown prince of Saudi Arabia. Suddenly there was just in everybody's grocery store aisle a giant tabloid about how rad that dude was.
Right. And he's like, welcome to the kingdom, y'all.
with no ads.
No,
just,
not an advertisement inside the magazine.
Really?
Yeah, that's rare for any publication.
That should raise a red flag.
Right. But one of the AMI sources told the New Yorker, Pecker's not going to take $30,000 from company funds to shut down a potentially damaging story without making sure it got back to him so he could get credit. And then in 2017, his company began acquiring new publications, including Us Weekly, a men's journal. And this was right around the time that he started becoming friends with MBS and publishing stories like friendly to MBS. So they think that basically MBS helped him fund those purchases of those new magazines.
Oh, wow.
And it's all just a big, you know,
you get more magazines, I get more press coverage.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So Trump, MBS.
Yo, hey, if Mohammed bin Salman, you know, I'm working on a couple magazines too.
Right.
It's called Getting High with Fidget Spinners. If you no ads needed. But it's funny. I mean, it's good to have someone like David Pecker. You know, it's like when didn't Nike like scrub every photo of A-Rod's man boobs from his steroid-induced like gynecomastia he got?
Oh,
like,
is that right?
You can't find a picture of it on the internet anymore. Wow. Like, it's very hard to find like photos of a shirtless A-Rod during that time. Wow. Because Nike was like, no, 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 no. We do not need this out.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah. What's going on in the world of baseball, Miles?
I mean, look, I wanted to bring this story up because I'm really excited about Shohei Ohtani, the Japanese baseball player, who is fucking doing great and just really fun to watch because he can pitch, he can hit, he's throwing triple-digit fastballs. And there was an article that just popped up in Wired about how the fastball is probably hit peak velocity and probably has for the last 80 years. Like, no one has actually thrown a ball faster than a certain amount. And so they're saying that a decade ago, major league pitchers threw a grand total of just 196 triple-digit fastballs in a single season. Last year, 40 pitchers collectively threw 1,017 triple-digit fastballs in the season. Mm. And so what they're saying is, like, sure, we're seeing more people being able to throw 100-plus mile-an-hour fastballs, but the velocity hasn't changed. It's just the number of people who have gotten to that level has. And because right now, I think the current recorded fastest pitch, I think, is from Aroldis Chapman, which was like 105 back in 2010. But they were saying that, you know, like Nolan Ryan was actually the first pitcher to be tracked by radar. And his, like, fastball, I think the fastest one they got was like 100.8. But back then, they were measuring 100.8 miles per hour.
Yeah, and that ain't shit.
Back then, they were measuring, that was the speed right before it crosses the plate, whereas like Aroldis Chapman's was taken as it was leaving his hand.
Right,
so they
right.
were saying that if you sort of reverse engineer this, those sort of numbers, that Nolan Ryan might have been throwing fastballs upwards of 108 miles per hour. And they said there are even pitchers from the 50s and 20s that they suspect probably had the same ability. So we're starting to see that our bodies are reaching a certain, I guess, peak level because, and I think the other thing they're doing is connecting this like sort of a lot of the strain from fastball pitching to the huge jump in number of Tommy John surgeries people are getting. And if you don't know what Tommy John surgery is, that's when a tendon in your elbow tears and you surgeons replace it with like a fresh one from your wrist or your forearm or your hamstring. And they do all kinds of shit to reinforce that. But apparently,
so that's not necessarily like making people faster pitchers, but it's just giving them
just the ability
more
to
years.
Yeah, exactly. It's longevity.
Yeah.
And they're saying because like the amount of torque you're putting on your shoulder is like holding 5 12-pound bowling balls, like 60 pounds, like at its most intense moment. And that just, our bodies just, you know.
Not built for it.
Yeah. So you can only throw a 5-ounce sphere about 105 miles.
Yeah.
Which kind of bums me out because I was always hoping, you know, people are running faster, jumping higher. Yeah. You'd think that logic would apply to baseball, but it's interesting to see that way. Maybe there is a limit to something like this. Yeah.
I guess that's what's interesting about baseball, or that's something baseball has that the other sports don't. Like basketball and football have gotten better, faster, stronger, like more visibly, you know, impressive just in our lifetime. Like you can see a change from when Jordan was playing versus when LeBron was playing.
Right.
In fact, there's an amazing supercut. Did you see that?
Yes.
Of like Jordan playing against people and just the shitty defense that he faced.
Oh, really?
And they're just like, dude, LeBron would fucking
destroy
these people. Because Jordan's like scoring on like three white dudes who like look like me, like and are just, you know,
basketball players weren't the
physical
specimens.
Yeah. But baseball is, you know, and I guess this is why people, you know, legislated the shit out of the whole steroid thing, is because baseball, you can basically watch somebody today and think about how he compares statistically to the people who were playing in the 20s. And, you know, obviously they were working with a more limited talent pool because it was a white-only sport back then. But
they had a bunch of white fatties.
Right. But
what position did you play, Jono?
I was outfield.
So did you know a lot of guys who were fucking up their arms from trying to throw the heat?
I mean, I threw out my arm several times. Not like in a way of tearing
right.
like ligaments or anything like that. But yeah, it's not a natural motion.
Right,
so you're
right.
definitely putting undue strain on your ligaments.
Right. Because I've seen like other people, there have been like pitching coaches who are trying to do other pitching motions that are less sort of strenuous on your body. But look, I'm just still holding out for some freak to be able to throw like 120 mile an hour fastball.
Right. That freak is going to be a cyborg.
Yeah, right. Exactly. And then we're just playing Base Wars, the old video game. And this is robots playing, actually, and we're not even dealing with humans.
If you guys don't think there are cyborgs in the MLB already, you're fooling yourself.
Okay, here we go. Who? Right. Who? Mike Stanton?
I can't get it.
I mean, Giancarlo Stanton?
MLB is always watching. All right, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back. And we're back. One other thing that I wanted to talk about real quick is this news alert that credit card companies are now just admitting that we don't need to sign bills, that like signing bills doesn't do anything.
Oh, they're so like when you get the receipt after the merchant copy, customer copy, sign here, you don't have to sign anymore.
Apparently, credit card vendors are basically acknowledging that that doesn't do anything. It doesn't prevent fraud.
Right.
And never has.
Yeah.
And which is something that like I always suspected, but I assumed they had some like other reason for that existing. But
is it not for the merchant? I thought it was more a protection on the merchant of like, look, we didn't
type this in. Right.
Someone signed it. That way the credit card companies don't come after them for the fraud, right?
Right.
Because it would make sense the credit card companies would be like, yeah, we don't need y'all to sign no more, so we can start getting these merchants to charge back.
Right.
I never signed the back of my credit card because I was just philosophically opposed to it. I was raised with a myth of sort of like, yo, don't sign the back because that's how they steal your signature.
Oh, God.
And that's how they're going to know how to sign your shit like you if they ever get your credit card. Because I think that was an era in which, like, you know, people were still using like the carbon paper, you know, credit card slips and just like, and then like you filling out the receipt like that. I guess it makes sense because whenever I get to like a electronic keypad, like where you slide your card and then I'm like, sign
here. That's
where
you especially
I literally do a circle or a line because I'm like, I've never been someone be like, excuse me, can I see your signature, sir?
Right.
Really?
I've never seen anybody match a signature.
Oh, I really try to. They do at the bank. I got into a fight at
my bank. For sure.
Well,
because they were like,
you
don't sign anything the same ever. I was like, do people sign their signature the same way every single time? I mean, I always put a star in the middle because I'm extra. But,
oh, you do?
Yeah.
Lacey Star
Moses.
Like,
yes,
I was like, this is, here y'all go, because I'm going to be signing.
Did you dot the I with a star? Is that how you do it?
No. So I put like, it's like Lacey and then the Mosley, and then I take the Y at the end and circle it back to the middle and make a star.
Oh, shit.
Probably very childish.
Did you take a class for that?
No, it's not cute. I have horrible hair. I have the handwriting of a serial killer. Like, it's so bad. And it changed. So
that's
then
true.
The bank's always like, this is not you. And I was like, this is me. Bitch, look at me in my eye.
Right. And tell me this is not me.
But they made me sign several times once. I had to go in the bank and spend an hour there just signing over and over again. Because
wow.
They were like, none of these are the same.
Right. And we've also brought in a forensic handwriting analyst to make sure this is you.
Yeah. And super producer Nick Stumpf was saying he has the same problem. His signature doesn't end up being the same. And that... That got him in trouble in Mexico where like he
Ooh,
went
Mexico.
Down there with nothing but traveler's checks and they were like, your signature doesn't look the same. And he was like, well,
like,
I'm going to starve to death then.
I swear, just don't look at me while I do it. I bet you I can do it.
Traveler's checks, that's a scam I need to get into.
With the
like.
Q on the end.
Right. Yeah, so apparently the whole idea behind those chips, which I assumed was like a security thing, super producer Nick Stumpf was saying that is actually to put the liability on the store instead of the credit card company, because I guess it pinpoints the location of the card to being there. Like, you know for a fact the card was there.
Rather than someone like manually punching a credit card number with an expiration date or something. They're like, no, you put the chip in right there in our terminal.
Right. But either way, the signature part of it, I don't know. Maybe that was opening the credit cards up to liability before, but...
I don't know. I think it was one of those things where we just got excited about knowing we're not signing. I don't care about the rest of the details.
Right, exactly.
I will no longer
be
signing.
Well, this is like the... When suddenly...
Susan.
Suddenly Susan, my favorite show, came out. And when suddenly airlines were like, oh, yeah, you don't actually have to turn off your phone during takeoff and landing for a little while. They just like opened
they
up.
They said that?
Yeah. There was a point where like we used to have to actually turn shit off.
Yeah,
Can't even have your phone on.
Right. And, or in airplane mode.
Well, before that, they were saying you had to turn it completely off.
Oh, gotcha.
And then they were like, all right, we were just fucking around about that.
Which brought about my favorite joke in Soul Plane. Where's they? Someone tries to make a phone call and the plane goes down.
Classic soul.
See,
plane.
The aviation industry plane. Paid for that joke to get written in.
Right.
Like, you see.
Are there other things like that that you guys can think of that you're like, I bet this doesn't actually need to exist, or that like the function of it doesn't totally make sense? That you're just waiting to for them to come out and be like, yeah, we were lying about that.
The whole political system. Police. You know what I'm saying?
Police are never gonna come
fuck,
out.
Our fuck, you know what I'm saying? Our two-party system of government. I don't know. I'll have to do something in my day-to-day.
Red light cameras.
What do you mean?
Red light cameras are.
I've been popped on a fucking red light camera.
Unconstitutional, though. You're not supposed to pay them. You don't have to. They can't come after you.
Uh-oh.
I run red lights all the time.
Well, they played my
ass. We do stand by this as legal advice. Yeah. We will stand
by. Wasn't there a case because somebody, because they argued they're not allowed to, they created a spray that would react with the flash that would basically obscure the license plate? And then like it got into this thing of like, well, actually, this spray is legal because what you're doing is illegal and we're protecting ourselves. From, I don't know.
Like, I'm not exactly sure, but I do know that, like, I'd be running these red lights and it'd be flashing. Now, listen, I'm not recklessly. Look, if it's 2 a.m. in L.A. and nobody's on the road, that's like olden times, like horse and buggy rules.
I like that. You should use this in court, too. My honor, I have to tell you.
My honor, not even your honor.
My honor, can I say something really quick? This is like olden times. The olden times defense.
I have read somewhere that red light cameras cause more accidents than they prevent because basically people, it adds a lag in the slamming on the brakes because you have to be like, okay, am I going to stop or go? Mm-hmm. And your initial instinct is to go for it. But remember there's a red light camera there. So you like speed up, then slam on the brakes and people just get wrecked that way.
Exactly. I'm trying to save lives out here.
Exactly.
Okay. Well,
so do not pay your red light camera bills. Super producer Anna Hosnier is letting us know that her mother designs those cameras.
It would directly impact her family. So actually, please pay everything that they say to do when that happens.
Y'all pay. I won't.
Yeah.
But Zeitgang, I want to hear some of your things that are like the credit card signature that you're just waiting for the companies to come out and be like, all right, we don't know why we were doing this in the first place.
But. Right.
All right, that's going to do it for this week's weekly Zeitgeist. Please like and review the show if you like the show. Means the world to Miles. He needs your validation, folks. I hope you're having a great weekend, and I will talk to you Monday. Bye.